Thanks for listening to the program on Thursday, December 13th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today it's Industry Chatter, as we do every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. And my guest on the program today is Tom Simmons, Area Vice President for the U.S. Public Sector for Citrix Systems. Tom, it's good to see you again. Thanks for coming back on the program.
Thank you, Francis. It's great to be here.
As you come in here and talk about what you're doing, let's start like we always do by telling me what you do for your clients in the federal government space, Tom.
So Citrix today is all about mobile work styles and cloud services. So we provide technology and solutions for government users, IT and contractors to virtualize workspaces and applications, make them very portable and available anywhere from any device over any network. And increasingly enabling the development of Amazon-like clouds, either in private or hybrid cloud kind of environments, and offer services through those cloud environments.
Mobilization, cloud, virtualization, and shared services. Too bad you couldn't work any buzzwords
exactly.
In the federal IT space into your explanation there. You're dealing, obviously, all kidding aside, in areas that agencies are just really hungry for information about. What kinds of questions are you getting from clients now? When we talked before, we talked about cloud, and we were still in kind of the education phase. Are we out of that now when it comes to cloud, where agencies have a pretty good idea what it means, what the capabilities are, and now they're looking for more specific solutions?
I think the definitions have narrowed, but there's still an education phase to be done. Cloud services is still different things to different people depending on what you want to do. And realistically, that's probably not going to change. That's the beauty of cloud, is it can be what you need it to be. Last time we talked, it was mostly about infrastructure as a service and, you know, how do I contract for processing capacity that I don't have to build in my own data center? Today, that's what most of the implementations are. You're seeing agencies move to cloud services around some of the standard kind of applications that are out there, email being the most popular. So you've got several agencies that have gone to like Google Mail in the cloud, and they're dealing with a transition from, you know, traditional on-prem kind of email services. And you'll see more applications in the cloud, whether it's applications developed to run and provided by cloud service providers, or just the enabling of legacy applications to run in the cloud.
Do you see agencies getting more comfortable with the idea that they don't get to go and hold their servers anymore like they used to like to be able to do?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we've seen the transition take place. Virtualization technology started it with just, you know, being able to virtualize a workload within a government data center. And so the loving terminology of server hugger has kind of dissipated a lot. Folks are less interested as application owners in specing the platform and specing the operating system that the applications will run on. They're more interested in the SLA. Can you guarantee me that the application is going to be available for this many users with this kind of response time? So, yes, we've seen that in the data center, and now that's migrating nicely to the cloud services and the ability to provide access to applications in the cloud.
Is technology driving that comfort, or are agencies kind of being forced that direction by budget pressures, or is it kind of a combination?
It's a combination. I think the logical approach to virtualizing infrastructure and applications in that infrastructure was kind of a no-brainer. With cloud-first initiatives and some of the 20-point plan stuff from Vivek, yeah, there's a budget pressure to do more of this kind of stuff, so the stick is there. But the carrot of being able to access things from cheaper, more available devices in the data center, and then more importantly, as a user, being able to access those things from a myriad of client devices, they're all benefits that are intrinsic in that kind of approach.
Because that's what I am hearing is, yeah, I have to do this according to the plan, but this is also a really good idea. And even if I didn't have to, this is the direction I'd be headed. And that's a different conversation, a different dynamic than I think we were seeing a year and a half ago, and maybe even as far back as when the 25-point plan came out.
Absolutely.
I mean, at that point, you were still, I imagine, driving, bringing people kicking and screaming to the whole concept.
Yep. And it is. I mean, you've got a lot of innovators in government. You've also got a lot of folks that don't want to be the first guy out there. Let somebody else figure out all the pitfalls and best practices you know, bring a very stable, tested kind of approach to this thing. Industry's been doing it for quite a while. The visionaries in government have embraced it over the course of the last 2 years. We've worked out a lot of the kinks. And so consequently, you've got some very tried and true solutions now that are available either as services or as examples of services so that, you know, the folks that are waiting to test the waters can now jump in.
But I wonder if you're seeing on the front lines what I'm reading about more anecdotally, and that's more broadly, not just having to do with cloud, it's more broadly a narrowing of the turnaround time between when the private sector industry focuses on a particular technology, whether it's cloud or some of the other areas that you're focused on, and when the federal government is comfortable doing it. Because, I mean, you've been in this business a long time. You know that for many, many years, the government was very slow to adapt things that the private sector was comfortable with for a considerable period of time before the government picks up on it. And now we're seeing, it seems to me, a real narrowing of that. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Absolutely. I would agree. And I think it's also an evolution and influx of commercial expertise into the government. It wasn't too long ago that most government systems were built specifically for government. They were stovepiped. They were built to spec. Generally, that technology wasn't transferable to another program. So you had this culture of, well, I'm going to GFE it. I'm going to build it myself. You had a lot of application development folks either in the government or under contract to the government. And, you know, so early days, we talked about COTS technologies and embrace what industry's doing and stop building or speccing or buying the $1,500 toilet seat. That really is happening. Folks are understanding that, yeah, there are some unique requirements within government that I have to pay attention to. But industry's paying attention to a lot of those things in their own implementations. I mean, you talk about security, you talk about intellectual property, you talk about personal information that needs to be protected. We in industry pay attention to that every bit as much as the government. The stakes may be a little different, but at the end of the day, we're all trying to accomplish the same thing. And I think that has really helped with the quicker adoption of these technologies by government
agencies. And the key phrase there, I think, is the stakes may be different. And for a long time, that seemed to be the stumbling block for the agencies, which is, well, you're doing a whole different thing in the private sector. So we're not headed that direction. So we're going to do the entire organization, the whole entire operation differently. Where I don't see that being the case anymore. I see a lot more adaptiveness in the part of government.
It is. It's less and less. And the other factor that you have to look at in government is scalability. I mean, a lot of the solutions that, you know, even we at Citrix might implement in our own organization for, you know, what are we, 5,000 employees now? You got to be able to scale that solution to a DoD user community of 2.5 to 3 million. Mm-hmm. Scalability is definitely a factor that needs to be incorporated into the decision process. But we're seeing, you know, the portability that virtualization allows and the expansive nature of cloud really does bring that scalability to most of the solutions that you see from industry today.
I want to talk about mobility when we come back, just because, yes, it's a hot topic. Yes, it's a buzzword, but it's a lot more complicated than I think people will give credit for being. It looks simple on the surface, and it doesn't operate actually that way. We'll do that when we come back with Tom Simmons. He's my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM for Industry Chatter today, and back in a moment.
Coming to the playoff game?
Yeah, Sammy's game is Sunday.
Cool, but you're going to miss an awesome game.
Nah, we just got a new GMC Acadia that comes standard with HD radio technology. The game's actually on one of the local HD2 channels now.
Nice ride.
Yeah, I went to HDradio.com, checked out all kinds of brands. Hyundai, Kia, Chevrolet, Mercedes, Toyota, BMW, Audi. You should see Artist Experience. It's amazing.
I'm going to have to check that out. HD Radio, now available from 28 different automobile brands and more than 150 vehicles. Go to HDradio.com for more.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
Here's Frank Konieczny, Chief Technology Officer of the U.S. Air Force, on the Federal Executive Forum on Defense Cloud Computing, Progress and Best Practices, sponsored by HP.
The question is, how are we going to extend everything to the tactical environment in a way that makes sense? And we talk about terrestrial a lot. Well, the Air Force has lots of other things that are not terrestrial. Right. So there has to be more thought as to what security architecture will be extended into the satellite domain, into the air domain at the same time.
Right.
To listen to the whole program made possible by the Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
No doubt Cloud's promise is appealing. Wary about the return on investments, risks, and governance? Let the experience of HP guide you to cost-effective, secure technology solutions. Cloud solutions can now be purchased by all military services and federal agencies through the Army Private Cloud APC-2 contract vehicle. Open up new ways to source, deliver, and govern highly scalable and flexible services. Make cloud a viable option for mission-critical needs through APC-2. Visit hp.com/enterprise/gov/APC2.
We think federal employees deserve a big
extra
thanks for all their hard work. That's why at the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Service Benefit Plan, we've added benefits at no added cost, from free well child care to free immunizations. After all, you've earned them. No wonder more federal employees choose Blue Cross and Blue Shield than any other coverage. To learn more, call 1-800-411-BLUE or visit
extras.fepblue.org.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. Does size matter? It does when you're trying to do business with the government. The SBA joins us to talk about its plan to raise the size ceiling for information industry vendors. Plus, we'll find out how the Justice Civil Division cleaned out fraudsters under the False Claims Act. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tom Simmons of Citrix Systems, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And we talked a little bit, Tom, in the first segment about mobility. And I guess the latest news in mobility today is that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, after saying that they were going to get out of the BlackBerry business, essentially, and transition toward iPhones, Reuters now reporting today that ICE will test BlackBerry 10, which is the new operating system coming, and already getting good reviews from security experts in particular. They have a hot list of 106 passwords that you can't use, the dumb ones like password and 123456 and stuff like that. But that concept that an agency would say, we're not going to do this and then we're going to do this, it strikes me that that must be extremely difficult for agencies when mobility is changing as quickly as it is and changing in as many different directions as it's changing. There's not just one track where it's evolving. It must be tremendously difficult for agencies to try to build or follow a strategy once they already have one built.
So that's the big challenge. I mean, in any evolutionary kind of area of technology, when things change as rapidly as they are today in mobility, you know, how do I come up with a strategy that keeps as many options open for me in the future as I can, but allows me to take advantage of the technologies and the capabilities that are available today? So, yeah, what we're seeing with most agencies that are working mobility projects or even mobility implementations today, nobody's planting a stake in the ground firmly. They're putting stakes in the ground to say, all right, here's my requirement for now. And we're going to establish security requirements, and we're going to establish minimum capabilities requirements and the like. But they are absolutely keeping an eye on what's going on in the future development. And in that, attempting to keep their options open, make sure that the next whiz-bang thing that comes along, if it fits, has a place in their strategy.
So here's how much of a technology nerd I am. I went back and looked at some of the devices that I know that friends of mine or acquaintances in government or whatever have used over the years. And the BlackBerry devices look very much like each other. Mm-hmm. They all look very, very much the same. The smartphones now that people are using also look very much the same. The difference is that obviously smartphones are software driven and OS driven, where the BlackBerry devices were primarily hardware driven, different alignments of the keyboards and so on. And I wonder if that is good news or bad news long term for an agency that's trying to build a mobility strategy, because you, especially for a BYOD strategy, because you're not necessarily sure at any given time how many of your users have updated to the latest software. And, you know, I carry an iPhone, but I'm still on iOS 5, the one with good Google Maps, not the one with right. the stinky Apple Maps, and all of those kinds of things. Do you have more control or less control over what your inventory or your fleet, I guess, because you don't really own all of this stuff anymore, looks like and works?
So it depends. And if you've got a strategy that's focused primarily on the device, then yeah, you've got to be flexible. You've got to account for, you know, what are the upgrades available and what are the different iterations available out there. And when you talk about mobility today, most folks are focused on mobile device management, MDM. Our vision from Citrix is focus more on the mobile application management and mobile persona presence, and less on the device. An analogy that we use is you contract with a satellite TV company. They could care less what kind of TV you have at home. All they want you to do is put their little receiver thing between your TV and their network so they can monitor what you use. They can bill you based on that monitoring. In their services, they give you a list of options, so you can pretty much self-provision the service that you want from the device. And when the next device comes along, they don't care. They don't have to change the back-end delivery infrastructure based on the enhancements and capabilities of the device. In mobility, we should be focused on the same thing. If you look at the overall objectives of data center consolidation, that time and distance of consolidating applications in centralized data centers has created the need for virtualization of applications and whole workspaces. Once I've got that infrastructure built in a consolidated data center, I can migrate it to the cloud, for one thing, to improve on efficiencies of processing. But then it becomes a portable application based on device. So I'm less concerned about what device are you carrying around, Francis Rose. I'm more concerned about, all right, let's make sure you've got this receiver thing so that I know who you are, what you're looking at. I can control what you're looking at through that receiver. And technology today says I can also, on your personal device, create an enterprise bubble, if you will, a virtual machine on that device. And in there, I can put all your business stuff or your government stuff. Keep it isolated from your iTunes and your pictures and all that personal thing. And then I can manage that enterprise-delivered bubble from the data center.
How is that different than the device management in theory? I understand the difference because you're managing the information and not the actual device. I get that part of it. Mm-hmm. But as far as the mechanism of the management, it seems that it's probably very similar because you're just managing a different thing, but I would think you could do it in the same way.
It is. Generally, in the centralized vision, we're managing things in the data center, and we're delivering, for the most part, a view of what stays in the data center. So from a security perspective, if my data doesn't leave the firewall, it's less at risk. In mobile device management, it's all focused on the data and the information that is on the device and how do I manage it and secure it and so forth. And then if the device gets lost, you know, how do I wipe it or disable it or whatever. We can take that same mobile device management concept and build it into either the entire device but managed from the data center, or just the government or enterprise furnished components of the device. And then if the device gets lost, I as the government have the right to wipe that data out, but I'm not going to mess with your iTunes and I'm not going to mess with your pictures. If you should find that your 3-year-old put it in the crib and you discover it, well, the government hasn't wiped out all your personal stuff. It's still there. And then the next time you go in and authenticate and sync up with the right kind of credentials and all that, then I replace all the government information as well.
You could get T-shirts made up that say, what happens in the data center stays in the data center.
Exactly.
There you go. Tom Simmons of Citrix is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute.
Life is long and filled with challenges. Navigating these can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Hi, this is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has been leading military personnel through difficult times to a more secure future by offering the right products and services at the right time for the best price. Our low-cost life insurance and personal approach allow us to help you plan wisely and feel comfortable that your family will be taken care of. Our unparalleled survivor assistance services will allow your family to take a deep breath and relax, knowing we'll take care of everything. When you choose AFMA, you choose a partner who will provide guidance, simple solutions, and personalized care. Our life insurance policies are available to all members of the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or find us online at AFMA.com today. That's AAFMAA.com.
How does your office celebrate a win? Hugs? High fives? Somebody makes an awkward speech, but somehow it works? However you do it, it feels great. Because it's a win. Every day there are celebrations across America by government agencies, commercial businesses, and healthcare companies. Some of them celebrate saving money. Some of them celebrate saving lives. Force 3 is here to help them celebrate faster by enhancing the way their people conduct business. Whether it's using virtualization technologies, new storage strategies, or ingenious network solutions. If you're interested in today's most advanced technology solutions, or if you just want to meet people that are doing great things, visit Force3.com. Force 3, let's do something great. Force 3 is a Cisco Gold partner and one of the largest providers of Cisco to the federal government. Visit Force3.com to find out more about our leading technologies.
For a faster, easier way for your agency to go green, choose GSA's Green Aisles, the custom online purchasing channels on GSA Advantage and GSA Global Supply. Each item in the Green Aisles is identified and labeled with environmental indicators like Energy Star, EPEAT, and more, so you can find the green products and services you need and meet all of your agency's sustainability requirements, environmental and economic. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
Who gets breast cancer? From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Most women who have breast cancer don't know it, but mammography can pick up X-ray signs of the disease before there are symptoms, such as the lump in the breast. And the earlier the diagnosis, the better the odds of survival. But researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say all women don't benefit equally. The CDC says that despite improvements in diagnosis and treatment, black women still are diagnosed when the cancers are more advanced and are more likely than white women to die. CDC researcher Lisa Richardson says early detection is crucial for all women.
For women who are diagnosed at the earliest stages, 5-year survival is greater than 95%.
The research is in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
Join FCEA and the U.S. Naval Institute for West 2013, January 29th through 31st in San Diego. Focusing on the strategic shift to the Pacific, this conference and exposition features senior military and government speakers, as well as six panel sessions on budget, fiscal cliff, innovation, retention, cybersecurity, and China. Courses, career, and financial seminars, and Don CIO sessions round out the professional development offerings. Register today at westconfexpo.org.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tom Simmons of Citrix Systems, my guest on Industry Chatter, talking about mobile application management as opposed to mobile device management. One of the details, though, of what you're talking about and mentioning in the last segment, Tom, about the ability of the enterprise, the agency, to control a little space or bubble on a personal device is identity management. You have to make sure that when you type in whatever the criteria is that you use, however you access that information, that really is Tom Simmons, and it's not Francis Rose who's gotten Tom's code somehow. What's the state of the art right now in identity management, and what are agencies looking for and expecting when it comes to IAM solutions?
So I think the unfortunate reality of today is most agencies are relying on the same authentication standard that was defined in HSPD 12 that most have implemented with CAC cards. So we see way too many mobility requirements today that require CAC to be the authentication method. It's good, it's secure, but that technology is coming up on 15 years old now. And in an elegant world of carrying around an iPhone or an Android phone, having to put a sled that will accommodate a CAC card and then manage that certificate through multiple operating systems, either from Android or Apple and then through the network and then to all the applications, is very dated. But it is, yes, state of the art. It's kind of the state of the art in government mobility today. I think everybody recognizes that it's not the best solution, but it's tested, it's proven, and you got more elements of industry that are building the sleds and allowing for that capability. But when you look at the state of the art in authentication outside of that, I do online banking. My bank is username and password with an online key that pops up when I see it. And I, you know that that's me. And when I'm logging in with my username and password, they then know that it is me. And usually it's device dependent, so I got to authenticate to a device and I get an email return and all that. You've also got developments that continue in biometrics, whether it's the fingerprint scanner, retina scanners are still available. The capabilities of smartphones certainly would enable those kinds of things. And then even going beyond that, you look at the capabilities of the chip that makes the CAC card a CAC card. Building that into the phone is not a far cry from where we are today. Now, that does create now a GFE kind of scenario for the phones that will rely on that technology. But I think the fact of the matter is that's the long pole in the tent for most eloquent mobility solutions is the authentication schema. And so long as we're still focused on the CAC card as the authentication, it's going to be a little clunky and a little awkward, but it works.
And we're also, when it comes to that, we're in a tight budget environment, and getting out of the CAC card business means getting into another business, and you have a bunch of agencies that may not be inclined to do that. Plus, you still have the HSPD 12 requirement, and I mean, that's kind of the ecosystem that exists in government now, and transitioning out of that I could see being kind of difficult.
It could be, but, you know, the HSPD 12 mandate was not CAC card. That just seems to be the implementation that most people have followed. There are other technologies that have been proven and tested against the HSPD 12 standards. And so those are available. Generally, what we would look to is anything that could tie to Active Directory, where we're going to manage your credentials inside the organization and then be able to verify those as good as possible. Generally, three-factor authentication is the standard out there. You know, RSA built the tokens that most people carried around for a long time. Today you've got smart tokens that will accomplish the same thing, especially from a smartphone environment. Implementation of those kinds of solutions does not come with a great expense. They're portable, they're easy to manage, they're very secure. So there are alternatives out there today, and I think most government agencies, especially in the policy arena, are looking at the alternatives, trying to figure out, do I continue down this path of CAC because I'm going to carry a CAC to get into the building and get into my office suite and all that, versus augmenting that with another technology specific for IT access.
Now, we spend a lot of time talking about mobility in the context of the smartphone, and appropriately so, I think. But do you think that we as a business, as an industry, spend too much time focused on that and not thinking enough about tablets? And by the way, people still use good old-fashioned laptops for enterprise computing?
Well, so the beauty of most mobility solutions today, if you focus on that analogy with the satellite TV provider, the device, you know, between smartphones becomes a discussion of, well, okay, any device. Everybody is still carrying around some kind of laptop technology, even in this generation that's been exposed to smartphones and tablet PCs. The buzz in the mobility industry is it's not BYOD, it's BYO3. Most information technology consumers today have at least three devices. They have a smartphone, they have a tablet, and they have a personal computer with a keyboard and a monitor attached. So, yes, I think the discussion of the device needs to encompass all of that. Beyond that, we can even go to the classic traditional PC that still sits on a desk with a keyboard and monitor attached to it at home. Interestingly, Defense Logistics Agency, in their mobility implementation, is one of the first organizations in my experience that has said, all right, you're a DLA employee. You want to be able to work from home and use your own PC. You got to buy a $25 CAC card reader. You got to download either McAfee or Symantec from my website and install it on that device. And then you got to come in through the Citrix environment with the authentication via that CAC card. So they really have embraced the BYOD, but the D is not a smartphone. In most cases, it's an old Dell or an old HP PC machine that's at home on a wide area network provided by Comcast or Fios or whoever it may be. But it checks all the security boxes and really does expand that access, especially in situations where you've got a Hurricane Sandy and the government shuts down and says, okay, you can't come to the office, but I still want to get paid. I still want to work. I can do that now.
I just always like to make sure that we don't get too distracted by the bright, shiny object, which right now in our space is the mobile phone, a smartphone, because as we talked about off the air a few minutes ago, there are always people, and I think a more sizable population of people than we think, who are satisfied doing business the way they've been doing business. I mentioned an FCA Bethesda event I attended not too long ago where Kim Hancher of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission was talking about their transition to BYOD. And she said 70-some percent of the employees there brought their own devices, but that means 20-some percent decided to keep using what they were using. And when she surveyed them, she found out that they liked the separation between the work device and the personal device. They liked being able to be confident that their work stuff was going to be separated from their personal stuff. And she made another interesting observation that I think maybe is an unintended consequence of BYOD. She said that she now has more requests for licenses for mobile devices than she has employees because people are going, hey, this works really well. And it goes to what you just – I thought of it because you just said BYO3. People are saying, hey, this works really great with my phone. I would love to also have my tablet device able to access the network. And so I don't know, and I don't know if she knows yet what the cost implication of that is going to be, licensing wise, but that's something that it works so well for her that it's turning out to be a different dynamic than she expected. Are you seeing that kind of thing across government?
Absolutely. I mean, and it goes just beyond government. I think that's the phenomenon that we're seeing in the business today. You like the ability. I'll use myself and my work habits as a good example. I get up in the morning. The first thing I do is go downstairs, put the coffee pot on, and open my laptop at home. And I'm checking email and looking at my calendar for the day. And I'm doing that from a workspace that's hosted in Fort Lauderdale. So that's on an HP laptop. I go upstairs, I shower, I get in the car, I drive to work. When I'm stopped,
yes,
I'm Mr. or Miss
Police Officer.
Exactly. I'm looking at updates on my smartphone. In the office, I have a thin client. I have a tablet PC that sits next to the TV when I'm at home, and when I'm not checking on my kids or playing a game, I can stay up on my email and my calendar and important things that are coming from work. So, yeah, I'm not a BYO3 guy. I'm a BYO5 kind of guy right now. But the beauty of this, build it in the data center and provide access to it from any device, really does give you that flexibility. And then you got to start thinking about today's mobility solutions. MDM is going to create a licensing scenario for each device that you try to manage. If you take that satellite TV provider concept, I'm licensing you as a user. I don't care how many devices or how many access scenarios you have. I just want to know that you, Francis Rose, are coming in, and when you come in, what device are you coming in on, and I might change your access and your scenarios a little bit. But I can do that. Because everything is in the data center.
But using that model, I mean, I'm going to have to get a box to connect to each one of my TVs. Is it, if you're talking about a device management, a mobile, an MDM scenario, it's the same thing. Is it the same thing with an MAM, mobile application management scenario?
So it's not a physical box. It's a software box, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
From Citrix, it's called Receiver. From other similar kinds of scenarios. It's a thin little applet that sits on the device, and about the only contingency there is the applet is written for the operating system of the device. And, you know, to date, we've got 5 million plus different kind of devices that we support with our solution. So it's the kind of thing that you would download from the App Store, or you can put it on your own website to service your user community.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, if you're Kim Hancher and you have X number of mobile devices, and you have, or X number of employees, and you have X number of mobile devices plus whatever, because some people are bringing more than one, if you're now in the business of buying multiple licenses, no matter what the scenario is.
In most cases where it's, you know, just application specific,
mm-hmm.
Most applications today are licensed by user. So, you know, even Microsoft with Microsoft productivity apps, your legacy government applications or ERP applications within government are not licensed by device. They're licensed by user. So you really don't incur the additional cost. The only additional cost comes in anything specific and licensed by the device.
And so that makes the concept of application management much more attractive from the government's perspective than an MDM strategy.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Tom Simmons of Citrix is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is In Depth with Francis Rose.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Who are the top leaders in the federal government? Federal News Radio wants to know, who has inspired you and what qualities do you think make a great leader? Nominate someone today. A top leader can be someone who knows how to motivate a team to success, or a mentor to younger coworkers. A top leader can be anyone. You tell us.
Nominations will be accepted through January 8th, and finalists will be announced as part of a Federal News Radio special report in February. Find the nomination form at federalnewsradio.com. Search Top Leaders.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tom Simmons of Citrix Systems, my guest on Industry Chatter. You brought along a column that you wrote for Federal Computer Week about the 10th anniversary of the eGov Act. And I'm wondering, first of all, we'll talk about what you wrote here in a moment, but I'm wondering, what is it specifically about the eGov Act that got you thinking and wanting to express some thoughts about it?
So the eGov Act, you know, 2002. We're on the heels of 9/11. Information sharing across agencies, huge topic. Internet, more than just an emerging technology, but still not leveraged the way a lot of the visionaries figured it could be. And while I don't know this for a fact, it may be the last unanimous act passed by Congress, at least in my memory.
It wouldn't surprise me if it was.
So, you know, important event, directing agencies to leverage technology wherever possible to be more transparent, more accessible. And kind of the consequence to that is now I start looking at my business practices, things that were built around the paper age. And, you know, how do I gather information? How do I process that information? How do I store that information? And in the world of electronic capabilities today, and under the vision of the e-commerce act, we really do have now the ability to say, all right, you don't want to fill out an application for disaster recovery after an event like Sandy. I don't have to go to a government office and find a form and fill it out and then watch the paper get processed through the system. I can go to a website and I can put all the information securely on that website, and then it gets dispersed to all of the folks simultaneously that need to analyze and act upon it. So I shorten my time to seek government services. I get it in the hands of all of the people that need to review it. So ideally, I get my results, whether it's funding or advice on how to deal with the particular problem. That all happens much faster. And I've reduced my overall cost of doing that business because I'm not shuffling paper throughout multiple organizations and then having to store that paper physically in some place for 5 to 7 years.
And especially with the information exchange part, too, you're not managing call centers nearly at the volume or expense that you were doing it before.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you've got the ability now to provide access to government information online as opposed to having somebody call up. Government's not unlike industry in that regard. If you can do it yourself on a website, it's cheaper. It's far more efficient in most cases, and then you have the call center just for the backup calls. So you reduce the size of your workforce. You reduce the size of the physical infrastructure, the office space that you need to house that workforce, and you do give better services to the citizen. So, you know, the motivation in looking at the 10-year anniversary really was, look how far we've come since 2002 with these capabilities. And the platform that it now sets up for the future for things like BYOD and telework and, you know, overall cloud services, it was a big milestone in getting us to where we are today. It's also going to be a bigger play as we look forward.
There's one particular quote I want to ask you about when we come back from the break that I thought was particularly interesting. Tom Simmons of Citrix writing about the 10th anniversary of the eGov Act, and we'll continue our conversation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment.
Right now, millions of American children are living below the poverty line, and many parents struggle to provide the very basics for their families. Parents are being forced to make drastic decisions between food and clothing. You can help make a difference today by partnering with Coats for Kids, a service of Operation Warm, to provide new winter coats to children in our community. Will you join us as we make sure no child is left out in the cold? Donate today at OperationWarm.org or call 800-733-WARM.
Astrium Services Government, Inc. is the newest name in satellite communications and the only provider of both ComSatCom and MilSatCom systems to the U.S. government. Part of the EADS North America team, Astrium Services Government will soon double X-band and UHF capacity available with the coming launch of two new Skynet satellites. U.S. government customers rely on them for flexible end-to-end SATCOMs using GSA's FCSA contract vehicles. Visit them at the DoD SATCOM Users Workshop.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
If you raise high the buff in blue, now's your chance to win prizes for showing your commitment to the Colonials. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now and start earning points for your likes, retweets, shares, check-ins, and more with GW Athletics content from GWSports.com and social media properties. Registration is free, and you can win special fan experiences, ticket upgrades, and buff in blue gear. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now.
Hi, Audi.
Hi, Santi.
Cool new car. And look at that radio.
Finally got myself a brand new car with HD radio technology standard.
HD radio? That's the digital broadcast radio with the new HD2, HD3 channels?
Yep. And my new car has factory installed HD radio with artist experience and iTunes tagging.
Wow, this is cool. I was looking at this on HDradio.com and you did it.
Yeah, come on, let's drive.
HD radio. Now available from 28 different automobile brands and more than 150 vehicles. Go to HDradio.com for more.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Just a few more minutes with Tom Simmons, Area Vice President of the U.S. Public Sector for Citrix Systems, writing in FCW about the 10th anniversary of the eGov Act. And one thing in particular I wanted to ask you about, Tom, you're right, we've seen some forward-thinking agencies implement BYOD pilot programs, and you cite the EEOC example that we talked about a little bit ago. You write, but wide-scale adoption lags as agencies wait for others to take the plunge in earnest. Now, at the beginning of the program, we talked about that, the fact that agencies naturally are risk-averse, and they would like to see a use case, someone else, what did somebody else do to achieve a particular result. Is that the only thing that you think will break the ice in this, or are there some other factors that you expect to see push agencies down directions like this that they haven't been willing to go yet?
No, there are definitely other factors. Culturally, there's still that concept of work being where I go instead of what I do. Mobility enables work from anywhere. So there's a lot of organizations that need to embrace the concept that I can do my work from someplace with a smartphone or a tablet or a laptop. So you've got that element. Telework has started the adoption of that, and it will increase. You've also got the security aspect of what's going on with what kind of information do I make available through my mobility solution. A lot of the organizations today are limiting the applications or elements of the work environment that are available on a mobile device. The old BlackBerry days, it was just email. Today it's email and calendar and, you know, maybe some of the, administrative kind of apps around, you know, how do I put in my time card remotely, or how do I put in for time off and things like that. Gradually, they'll get more comfortable that those are workable things that I can do from a remote device, and will expand the number of applications and the kind of data that will be available through these mobility solutions. But making everybody comfortable that I'm not going to put data out there in a non-secure, or if my security is in question. And I think that's probably the biggest element right now that needs to be addressed is, we believe that the security is there, and we've proven that in a lot of scenarios. answering the what ifs of, you know, the folks that really are very, very conservative in this regard, brings it into the realm of risk management. Mm-hmm. And how do we weigh increased access from security and make the right decision? And those are very prudent things that we have to do with government.
There's a difference, though, I guess, between risk management and risk aversion. And I guess it's pretty easy for somebody who is just completely risk averse to try to push it off as a risk management issue. Am I off base there?
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, there is risk aversion in some components of organizations that we see manifest in other ways. I mean, just in what we're doing in trying to identify what is the laptop or desktop environment in the organization that we're trying to push out to a mobile device. In some organizations, they've got those devices locked down to the point where you barely recognize them as computers. You need to comprehend what is acceptable risk. Zero risk is never possible. Mm-hmm. But if that's what you're trying to achieve, yeah, you're really going to stunt the implementation of these kinds of solutions.
I guess the good news in this realm, though, is that agencies are more willing to be satisfied with the 85 or 90% solution in this area as they are in other areas, requirements and a lot of other areas that we didn't even have a chance to get into today.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the beauty of where we see government today is embracing new ways of thinking, new technologies. You know, budget seems to underlie too many decisions that government is making. But in this environment today, the real need to do more with less is driving innovation in this area that we hadn't seen before.
Well, and we just have about a minute left, but I hear more and more people saying that these budget constraints may actually drive some really healthy change for agencies that wouldn't have happened in the environment that we were in 2 or 5 years ago.
I would absolutely agree. That concept of embrace what industry is doing, make sure that it's secure enough for government, but you got to do more with less. We can't continue to throw money at the problem.
It's great to see you today, Tom. Thanks very much for coming in. Pleasure
Same
to talk
here,
to you as always. Tom Simmons is the Area Vice President of the U.S. Public Sector for Citrix Systems, my guest on Industry Chatter today. Our conversation will be archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose is next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.